hated it.
She's right. I did. Maybe I still need time. Not just to get over the last 9 months of repairing traumatic injuries, or crash coursing cosmetic surgery on the job, or living a life in secret apart from my loved ones. I also need to figure out what it is that I want from the future. Who I really want to be. Because the truth is, after so many years of trying to outperform expectations, I think I need a minute to stand back and simply exist. And if I'm lucky, no matter what we do next in life, that's the way it will be. Me and Rose. We stop just behind the cars, watching the cottage, admiring its inviting glow. When Rose turns into me, I wrap my arms across her back.
You ready?
She asks. I lean down, pressing a kiss to her lips. She sighs against my mouth. How I ever lived so long without touching her, I don't know. And now it feels like I'll never get enough. When we pull away from each other, I sweep the hair back from her face, giving a final kiss to her forehead. Probably not.
It's going to be great. A real ta-da moment.
Rose squeezes my waist in a tight hug and then lets go, taking a few steps back. She smacks a bug on her bare leg and I catch sight of her scar on her calf. One I helped to mend. But when I meet her eyes, I know that even from that first moment we met, it was Rose who healed me.
I'll go around to the deck and sneak in. You come in the main door,
she says, her smile soft and reassuring.
It'll be great. I promise.
I nod once, because it's all I can manage. She picks up the squirming raccoon, then turns and jogs away to the front of the cabin. I'm left standing in the dark, watching her disappear into shadow. When I'm sure she won't see, I pull a box from my pocket. I flip open the lid. The ring catches the dim light. If I were to look close enough, maybe I could see the night sky reflected in polished gold and precious gems. When we look up to the stars, we're looking back in time. But all I see is the future. And it's richer and brighter than I ever thought it would be. I close the lid, slide it back in my pocket. I hike my bag higher on my shoulder and take a deep breath. I walk to the steps of the cabin, determination in my stride, love and hope alive in my chest. I'm going to make up for lost time. Epilogue 1. Maps.
What in the fuck is that?
An upgrade. Sloane sighs and cocks a hip, trying to look as irritated as possible. She does an admirable job, but I can tell she's biting down on a grin. And she knows I know. She has to look away, probably in the hopes it'll make it easier to keep up her disgruntled display. But it doesn't work.
You told me once that no boys were allowed in the woods unless they had scales and a breeding kink, I say with a wicked grin.
That was 4 years ago.
So? I'm just making sure I've got clearance, you know. I don't see what the problem is. We're going to be in the woods.
Not in West Virginia.
It's still the woods, I say with air quotes. And the last time I checked, you kind of enjoyed the Saul cosplay. I'm just taking it up a notch.
Up a notch?
She repeats with a snort. I shrug, and Sloane levels me with a flat glare. Her cheeks flush beneath her dusting of freckles. It's still my favourite shade of pink.
You think this is just a single notch?
She waves a hand toward my polyester dragon suit, this one enhanced by layers of scales glued to the fabric and even my skin, and a shit ton of green and blue makeup.
This is at least 12.
My bottom lip juts out and she groans.
What? You don't think I'm pretty anymore? Are you embarrassed to sit next to me?
Yes.
She deadpans.
Hard yes.
My prosthetic foam horns graze the roof of the car as I shake my head in feigned disappointment. I let out a deep, dejected sigh and Sloane curses, crossing her arms. I pat the passenger seat, but she doesn't move, her feet still planted to the sidewalk.
Come on, Blackbird. Just get in the car. We've got places to be.
If you're trying to fly under the radar...
Great pun, love.
Maybe showing up to the location of our annual game in a full dragon costume is not the way.
It's a cabin. In the woods. In the middle of fucking nowhere. I'm sure we'll be just fine, love. Get in. We're going to be late, and I want to chase you and fuck you on the forest floor before the others get there.
With another long, suffering moan, Sloane tosses her bag in the back and slides onto the passenger seat.
You're the worst.
And you still love me? Now give us a kiss,
I say as I lean over the center console with my lips pursed. She can't help but giggle this time as I wrap an arm around her shoulders and pull her closer, laying a kiss on her cheek as she squeals a protest that has no real fight to it. My painted lips leave a green smear behind on her skin. As soon as I let her go, she flips the visor down and rubs at the mark.
You did use actual face paint, right?
Sloane's eyes slice to mine and narrow.
Please tell me this isn't poster paint or some shit.
Of course,
I say convincingly, though her glare doesn't soften. With a final grin at my wife, I key the engine and we start making our way out of Boston. Do we get a few honks and hollers as we idle in the Friday afternoon traffic? Yes. Does Sloane groan and rub her forehead? Also yes. But every single time, it ignites her blush and summons her laugh. And I relish each flush of pink and every smile. We stop once for gas and switch the driving responsibilities halfway through our 6-hour trip. Sloane adamantly declaring that I'm either going to have to hold it or piss in a bush on the side of the road because she'll rough gouge my eyeballs and leave crusty edges if I even think about walking around in public. When we roll into Lynsmore, it's nothing more than a gas station and a general store and a few dilapidated houses with weathered wood planks and cracked window panes and chipped paint. It's beautiful in the golden hour, the kind of light that makes you feel nostalgic for a time and a place where you've never lived, but it still gives you an ache in your chest. The town seems deserted, though it's clearly not, with the mowed lawns and the stocked general store. But no one is around to prove it. A sign just past the town limits says, Barn Dance and Barbecue, every Friday from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m, 102 Magnolia Street. In retro lettering that appears to have been recently repainted.
I guess that explains why the town is so empty,
Sloane says as she glances down at her watch.
7:30. Do you think the killer is there?
I shrug. Silence stretches between us. An uneasy dread creeps into my veins. I glance over just in time to catch the dimple appear next to her lip. Oh no, Blackbird.
Hey, BMW.
Sloane chimes, and the car responds with a robotic,
Hello. Show me the route to 102 Magnolia Street. I have found one route to 102 Magnolia Street,
the car says, sounding like it's fully on board with Sloane's mission to get a revenge for my costume antics. An alternative route appears on the dashboard display.
Should I take it? Yes,
Sloane declares, at the same time as I say, No.
Okay, I'll take you to 102 Magnolia Street,
the car says.
Blackbird, no.
Butcher, yes.
Sloane's wicked giggle is punctuated by the tick of the turning signal as she makes a U-turn to follow the car's directions.
You're the one who decided to spend 6 hours in a dragon costume.
And you love cosplay.
I also love winning.
But we have to get to the cabin.
And we will, after a brief detour.
Then I should really come with you. For safety purposes and whatnot.
Most definitely not,
she says as she turns down a rural road. The Magnolia Street signs seem to mock me as we pass. We can already see the barn ahead, cars parked in the clearing next to it, light leaking between the planks of its walls.
I hate to point this out, pretty boy, but you're not really dressed for the occasion. This little get-up of yours is not what I would call discreet. So I guess you'd better just wait in the car.
But the woods?
Sorry.
She's definitely not sorry. Not for that fake little cringe and the exaggerated pout that follows. But there's nothing more murderously adorable than when she's determined to get under my skin and flay it clean from my bones with her competitive edge. I think it's my favourite version of Sloane Kane. Even still, I fucking hate the idea of sitting behind in the car while she gets the jump on this year's annual August showdown. Though I refuse to admit it out loud, she's won more rounds of our murder competition than I have. And even though we've decided to extend our game indefinitely, it's not like I need to lose yet another year to my beautifully vicious wife. Sloane parks the car at the entrance of a farm field gate on the opposite side of the road from the barn, where the vehicle will be out of view. I blow out a long breath and try to settle into my seat, though my prosthetic horns aren't making it easy to get comfortable.
You look like you're regretting your life choices,
Sloane says as she turns the engine off. Maybe one or two.
Then I'll leave you with this lovely reminder that every time you try to take your teasing a little too far, karma comes along to bitch slap you in the ball sack.
That's extreme, and also inaccurate.
Is it? Remind me, how was that rump roast at Thorsten's? I could see if they have any ice cream at the barn dance, maybe.
I cross my arms and glare through the windshield at the empty field of grass ahead.
Touché.
I don't have to look over to feel the radiant heat of Sloane's triumphant smile, but I do still glance her way. Her hazel eyes dance in the dim light. Her dimple winks at me with mischief.
I'll be back soon,
Sloane says as she opens the car door.
Maybe with snacks.
Though I say her name in a final protest, she's already closing the door, her devious cackle following in her wake. I twist as much as my costume will allow and watch as she jogs down the gravel road toward the barn, the urge to follow her nearly consuming me. But she's right. Though I'm sure this barn dance is a pretty close-knit affair where everyone knows everyone, Sloane at least has a chance of flying under the radar. I, on the other hand, do not. Rowan Kane, you feckin' eejit, I hiss as she disappears from view and I settle back into my seat. You will never live this down if she wins. And then I wait. And wait. And wait. I'm debating whether I should get out and check on her when I look toward the barn and spot Sloane jogging back toward the car. It's only been 45 minutes, just enough time for the sun to set and the colours of the sky to deepen, but it feels like hours. Relief fills my chest when she pulls open the door and slides into the driver's seat with a satisfied sigh. Productive? She shrugs, but her voice is just a hint too breezy when she says,
Not really.
Did you find anything useful?
Only this,
she says as she pulls a bottle of liquor from beneath her flannel shirt. She passes it to me with a grin so bright it blares her thoughts like a beacon. Thoughts entirely centered on irritating the shit out of my broody older brother. What the hell is that?
Moonshine, probably. I overheard someone say it was whiskey, but I have my doubts. So I hope dragons can sing, because I expect the rocky road to Dublin at full volume tonight.
Well, I reply as I read the homemade label before I place it on the floor behind me. This dragon can't sing, but I'm certainly going to do it anyway.
That's my soul.
Sloane leans over the center console and presses her lips to mine. Her scent of ginger and vanilla floods my senses as though it's permeating my skin, embedding itself where it belongs. I graze her cheek with my knuckles, tracing the constellation of freckles that dusts her skin, a pattern I know by heart. As my fingers thread into her hair, she sighs into my mouth, pressing her lips harder to mine. Moving closer, and just as I deepen the kiss, she pulls away.
Gross,
she says, her nose crinkling. Gross? Gross, Blackbird. I am mortally wounded. Sloane giggles as she opens the compartment in the center console to retrieve a tissue and wipe her lips off.
Your makeup? You can't taste that.
I was committed to the bit. I must be desensitized.
That does not taste like lipstick, Rowan.
She pulls the visor down and checks that she's rubbed any remnants of green from her mouth. With a sideways glance, she assesses my face, her eyes lingering on my lips before she returns her attention to the little mirror.
Are you 100% sure you used face paint?
Mostly. Sloane's head whips to the side and she pins me with a scrutinous glare.
What do you mean, mostly?
It wasn't staying on super well, so I augmented it.
Augmented it? With?
When I break my gaze away with a cringe, she whacks my arm.
Rowan Kane.
Poster paint. The car sinks into an eerie silence. This might be how I die. My wife will probably murder me and dump my body into a field. I weigh my chances for survival. I can cook. That has to count for something, right? And she thinks I'm pretty. At least, she does when I'm not in a full dragon costume, complete with foam horns and layers of silicone scales. But she's pretty fast. And stabby. And she goes for the eyes. It takes a long moment before I look at her. When I do, I'm not sure she's actually breathing. She's so lethally still that I don't know if I should maybe just take my chances and run for it. And then she bursts out laughing. It's so loud and sudden that it startles me, and that seems to delight her even more. She laughs and laughs and fucking laughs. What's so funny? The bottle said it was water soluble, I say, and she wheezes, tears leaking from the corners of her eyes as she parrots my words back to me through strained vocal cords.
Did you test it?
She manages to get out, though only barely. No! I flip my visor down and open the cover on the mirror. My face paint concoction has definitely stayed put, which is maybe a bit concerning now that I think about it. It's been on there for hours. Maybe too many hours. I swipe my thumb across my tongue and rub at a spot on my cheek next to the scales. While the top layer smears, the skin underneath is definitely still green. Ah, shite! There's gotta be a way to get this off, right? Blackbird, you like makeup. And painting. So you know how to get this shit off, yeah? It'll come off, right? Sloane cackles through my questions, her eyes still watering as she keys the engine and reverses onto Magnolia Street.
Somehow I don't think a homemade apricot to turpentine scrub is the best option. But don't worry,
she says as she reaches over to pat my hand.
I still think you're pretty, even if you're permanently green.
Permanently? By the time we reach the cabin, I'm sure Sloane regrets letting the word permanent tumble from her grinning lips. I pepper her with questions for the remaining 30-minute drive, about skin and dye and just how bad would it really be if I tested out this apricot turpentine scrub idea. That one earns me a much-deserved smack to the shoulder. I guess she's right. Testing out new things on my face has apparently not gone so well for me today, so ramping it up to another level is probably not the best idea either. In fact, the whole costume was definitely not my best idea, though it seemed like a good one at the time. I guess I didn't anticipate a barn dance detour that would cost us a precious hour and a half of time. I was hoping to arrive early so I could chase my wife through the woods and make her laugh as I fucked her on the forest floor. At least I'm extremely successful in the laughter part. Too bad it's not just my wife who's delighted by my costume. You feckin' dumb bellend. What in the Christ Jesus are you wearing? Lachlan says from the porch as we exit the vehicle. Sloane's grin is maniacal as she stands off to the side to watch our exchange with unrestrained glee. What the fuck does it look like I'm wearing, asshat? Lachlan makes a show of taking off his glasses and polishing the lenses with the bottom of his shirt before he slides them back on. Looks like an idiot suit. Is that the right answer? Sloane bellows a laugh as Lark pushes open the screen door, drying her hands on a tea towel as she exits the rustic cottage. She lurches to a halt as soon as her eyes land on me.
Oh, holy hell!
Her giggle is devious, a bright contrast to Lachlan's derisive snort.
Is that suit clean?
Unfortunately, I grumble.
Oh, Rowan.
Don't give him any sympathy, Lark. Pity makes him even more insufferable, the feckin' twat.
But look at him. He's all sad and horny. Literally.
Sloane interjects, whacking one of my yellow horns as she heads toward the porch to give Lark a hug.
Also permanently green.
We need to talk more about permanent, Sloane, I say as I grab our bags in the moonshine and then follow after her, my dragon tail swishing across the gravel behind me. When Lachlan groans and runs a hand down his face, I exaggerate the sway of my hips just to annoy him.
We've talked about it plenty.
Though Sloane doesn't turn my way, I can almost hear her eyes roll.
Talk about it with your brother.
Eyeball spider lady, Lachlan says as he wraps Sloane in a hug. How do you tolerate that pain in the arse?
He usually makes up for it in other ways.
With a kiss on Lachlan's cheek, she lets him go and joins Lark's side. The two link arms to share a flurry of whispers, probably about whatever it was Sloane actually discovered at the barn. They head inside as I climb the porch steps to stop in front of my older brother.
Give us a kiss, asshat.
Before he can get away, I wrap Lachlan in a bear hug and plant a smear of a green kiss against his cheek, one of my scales falling off in the process.
Gobshite. Bellend?
When I let him go, Lachlan still can't help himself. He lays his hand on either side of my head and presses his forehead to mine.
You're still a reckless little shit, Lachlan says,
and though he tries to look serious, the glimmer in his eyes gives away his amusement.
But I still love you. Love you too.
With a clap to the side of my head, Lachlan grins and lets me go to pick up one of my bags and the bottle of moonshine, examining it with a furrowed brow.
What the fuck is this?
Homemade whiskey, apparently.
Christ Jesus.
Sloane found it at a barn dance in Linsmore. And judging by the way those two are conspiring, that's not the only thing she found. When I nod toward the two women whispering in the kitchen as they open a bottle of red wine, Lachlan follows my gaze and groans.
I think she's got a jump on us for the game. Well, I might have an idea or two myself.
I thought Connor wasn't going to give you extra clues.
Sloane will be so pissed if he is. You bellend,
Lachlan says with an eye roll, keeping his distance from the two women as they head toward the living room with their glasses. When he seems to think they're safely out of earshot, we take their place in the kitchen, and he cracks open the moonshine.
I am capable of doing my own research, and I promised the eyeball spider lady I wouldn't mine Connor for information. I've seen what's involved in eyeball removal. I don't want her to make good on that threat,
he says with a shudder before he pours a glass and slides it across the counter of the island.
Trust me.
Lachlan raises his glass in a silent toast and I do the same, and then we take a sip of the golden liquid. It burns my throat as it slides down to my stomach, or I'm pretty sure it'll eat through my guts.
Fuck, that is atrocious. Are you sure it's not battery acid?
No, I'm not sure at all.
Though it's not going to stop me from drinking enough to serenade you. I think it might kill us both before that happens,
Lachlan says as we both suffer through another sip. So, you said you have information, I say in a conspiratorial whisper as I lean closer across the island. What kind of information?
Yeah, man guy,
a chipper voice says from right behind me. Just as I take another drink of moonshine that shoots up my nose and spurts past my lips in a spray that hits Lachlan right in the shirt.
I want to know too, what kind of information?
I spin around to the sound of Lachlan's
Christ Jesus!
And the combined squeals of Sloane and Lark. The little banshee grins up at me, her dark eyes sparkling. She sets down a pissed off looking raccoon of all fucking things, though somehow that tracks.
Rose, fucking hell, you scared the shit out of me.
I move to give her a hug, but she backs up a step, her hands raised.
Whoa, now that's a situation you've got there. You look like you're starring in the busted version of Wicked.
She leans forward and pats my arm,
A for effort, or something.
Though I hear Sloane snort from the living room, it's my older brother's voice that seems to echo in my mind. Rose? Rose and I exchange a fleeting smile before I turn to look at Lachlan. I've never seen this expression on his face before, his brow furrowed, his eyes taking on a glassy sheen.
Hi, Lachlan.
Lachlan takes a few slow steps around the end of the island, steps that quicken until he's rushing to embrace Rose, that shocked hope and guilt still etched into his face until he pulls his glasses off and wipes his eyes. They exchange whispers, things only the two of them are meant to hear, but words I catch anyway. Words about regret and choices, about time and promises, about how some vows are never meant to be made because they are not in our hands to keep. The screen door quietly closes, and Fionn steps inside the cabin. He lets his bag slide from his shoulder and drops it on the floor, never taking his eyes from Lachlan.
I thought maybe you should have a doctor around, just in case, he says, clutching the back of his neck.
I turn back to Lachlan, whose heart has been shattered for so long that its sharp edges have scored the pain right into his face. His eyes glisten with tears. His hand trembles when Rose lifts it from her shoulder.
Fionn,
is all Lachlan manages to get out, and then he's striding across the room. The two lock in an embrace that lasts long enough that it reminds me of others they've shared, like the time Fionn graduated from medical school, or the time we landed in Boston from Sligo and set foot in our own apartment, our first safe place, or even that hazy memory of the hospital that first day we met our little brother. There was a heart-splitting sadness that I was too young to fully understand. So much grief for the loss of our mother, a pain that weighed heaviest on Lachlan's shoulders. But there was so much love too. It was there in the way Lachlan held our baby brother in his arms, just like it's here in the way he holds onto him now.
I'm sorry, he whispers.
In all our years together, I've never seen Lachlan's shoulders shake like they do now. I've never seen him crack open and cry, not even when we were young. He grew up so fast. Spent his youth walking us through darkness, our beacon in a night that I once thought would never end.
I don't know how to fix it. I'm just so feckin' sorry, Fionn.
It's not your fault, Fionn says, pulling back just enough to look into Lachlan's eyes. I notice for the first time how Fionn really looks different. Not like the man we thought he wanted to be, steeped in high expectations and buttoned up formality. He looks at ease. At peace. I'm sorry, Lachlan. It was never your fault, and I would have gotten in touch or come home sooner, if I could have. I just needed time. Time to reset myself, I guess. Time to figure things out without relying on you both to somehow do it for me. Well, maybe not him, he says with a nod to me. He looks like a dumpster goblin. Lachlan lets out a watery laugh and turns his glassy eyes to me over his shoulder.
I think we've just officially replaced your shit flicker nickname. Dumpster goblin suits you.
Especially now that it's permanent.
Lark pipes up. When I glance her way, she's wiping a track of tears from her cheeks with the heel of her hand.
I really need to know if this is actually permanent,
I say as I start peeling off a scale glued to my cheek. Fionn scratches his stubble as he watches me from beneath the arm Lachlan keeps slung over his shoulder.
Will it come off? You didn't tattoo it on there, did you? Of course not, dickhead. I'm sure you're probably fine. Probably does not inspire much confidence, I say, but Fionn only shrugs. You'll probably have to wait until the skin cells replenish. How long does that take? A couple of weeks. A couple of weeks,
I parrot back to him as Sloane cackles in my periphery.
Maybe. I mean, if you really scrub it twice a day. Otherwise, probably a month, Fionn says.
I look over at Sloane, but she just shakes her head. I do my best to look dejected, which really isn't so hard to do, and then I shuffle my way toward my brothers. I need a hug. Even dumpster goblins need love. With my arms outstretched, I grab hold of my brothers, and though they protest, they still wrap their arms around me in return.
You're an idiot,
Fionn whispers to me as the three of us press our foreheads together.
And you're a birdseed-eating twat,
Lachlan counters on my behalf.
And you're a broody asshat,
I say, and he grins, the shine still bright in his eyes. I swallow, trying to force the sting in my throat from burning its way into tears. It feels like a displaced bone has finally been reset, like I couldn't take a breath without feeling a pain that dug between my ribs, and suddenly, it's gone.
And judging by the way my brothers both look back at me,
they feel the same way. Neither one of you would make as good of a dragon as me, by the way, but I still love you both.
Yeah, Fionn says. Me too.
Lachlan clasps a hand across the back of each of our heads.
Love you too, my boys. And I'm proud of you.
When we release each other, Fionn takes a step back, making a slow pivot on his heel. He looks at each one of us before his gaze finally lands on Rose and sticks there.
Now that we're all here, he says, I have an announcement to make.
Rose's gaze flicks to Lark and Sloane, then to me and Lachlan, as though any one of us might know what Fionn is up to.
Announcement?
Well, really more of a question. Fionn takes a few slow steps towards Rose. She looks like she might want to run, but she seems fused to the floor.
I wanted to tell you that I love you, Rose Evans.
I love you too,
she whispers, tears gathering in her eyes as Fionn takes her hand, the other buried in his pocket.
When you showed up in Hartford, it was the single greatest event of my life. You crashed in and tore my reality apart. I had taped up the broken parts of my life, and you showed me that those pieces couldn't be sewn back together. They never fit in the first place. But you remade everything, Rose. I've admired you every single day I've known you. Your bravery, your recklessness, your huge, wild heart, your willingness to embrace every part of yourself. You showed me how to care for the darkness, not to fear it or hide it away.
Fionn withdraws his hand from his pocket as he lowers to one knee. Rose's shoulders shake, the tears flowing down her skin.
I love you, Rose Evans. I'm not letting you go. I never will.
He flips open the lid of the box in his hand. A stack of three separate rings rests inside, made to look like a sunset of orange sunstone over a sea of sapphires and blue diamonds set in hand-etched gold.
Marry me, Rose. Let me love you forever.
Rose's joy can't be contained. It bursts from her in a cry, and then she crashes into Fionn. He raises from his bent knee with Rose clutched in his embrace. There are tears and whispered words of love. They kiss, they laugh. And then Lark starts up a playlist as Lachlan breaks out a fresh bottle of whiskey. After a round of hugs and laughter and a toast with my family, I step away to finally get rid of my costume and scrub my skin beneath a hot shower. When I return to the living area, the celebrations are still in full swing. I just stand back to watch for a minute, to marvel at the twists and turns that life takes. When I look a little more closely, I see the intricate pattern in the web, the map that brought us all together. I'm watching my two brothers making up for lost time when I feel Sloane's hand around my wrist. I lift my arm and she nestles into my side.
Hey, Butcher,
she whispers. Hey, Blackbird. I press a kiss to the crown of her head. Fionn laughs at something Lachlan says, his touch never straying from Rose as the two sit cuddled up on the couch. Sloane sighs and I look down to see a contented smile lingering on her face. I'm going to hazard a guess that you had something to do with that, I say as I nod in their direction. Sloane shrugs beneath my arm.
Maybe.
I'm sure your partner in crime was involved.
You're my partner in crime.
The other one. Sloane grins but doesn't tear her eyes from the scene before us.
What can I say, man guy? Lark is a hopeless romantic.
Thought so. I turn toward her, Sloane's arms folding around my waist. I frame her face in my hands and press a kiss to her lips. Thank you, I whisper into her skin. I love you, Sloane Kane.
I love you too, Rowan. And now that they're occupied,
she says with a nod toward the living room.
Want to sneak away and go do karate in the garage?
I smile down at my beautiful wife, those hazel eyes so full of love and joy, that dimple, a flash of mischief next to her lip. I thought you'd never ask.
Epilogue 2. Blade of Rage. I crouch behind the bushes and peer through the leaves, their shades of green vibrant in the morning sun that breaks through the canopy of oak and ash. The group huddles together at the edge of the rocky outcrop, taking turns with the binoculars. Lachlan and his wife, Lark, Fionn and Rose, now engaged. Rowan Kane. Sloane Sutherland, now a Kane too. I still hear her name the way Rowan called out for her the one and only time we met.
Sloane! Sloane!
His voice echoes in my mind in the desolate hours of night. One of the many nightmares that haunt the shadows of my room in corners where the light never seems to reach. I glance down at the plaid shirt I'm wearing. Burnt orange, navy blue. Buttercream squares crisscrossed with lines that have faded with time and wear. I run my fingers over the stitches I sewed into the torn fabric of the sleeve. I'm going to give this to you, but I need your help to get it off. I lift my gaze to the group again. I've watched them before. Their easy interactions. Sometimes their harder ones. A faint smile crosses my lips as I watch them whisper and laugh in hushed tones. Rowan's skin is tainted green from that ridiculous costume he was wearing last night. But when he wraps an arm across Sloane's shoulders and presses a kiss to her forehead before returning to his conversation with Lachlan, I can see the way she looks at him. Like he's the most beautiful thing she's ever seen. I had love like that once, too. I had Adam. My eyes burn with unshed tears. Most days I've learned how to swallow them, how to cut them up with the blade of rage. But today? Today is always the hardest day. 3 years ago, Adam was stolen from me in a storm of screams in the roar of a chainsaw. He died to the final notes of the maniacal laughter of a deranged killer. I would have died too. Yes, he killed Adam, and I promise you, Adam will be the last person Harvey Mead ever kills. I press my eyes closed. When I open them, the group is standing, brushing off their jeans, taking sips of water from bottles, shedding extra sweaters or checking knives or tightening straps on their backpacks as they get ready to leave the escarpment for the farm hidden in the valley. The one where a murderer lives. The next monster, the apex predators, have come to kill. A spike of adrenaline drives through my heart, as sharp as the ones that Rowan drove through Harvey Mead's hands to nail him to the floor of his barn. An offering to the woman he loved. I watched, hidden in the tall grass as she came back to the barn with her injured arm held close to her side, a mummified body tucked beneath the other. She looked broken, but gleeful. Indomitable. Fucking indestructible. Not just a survivor, but a reckoning. A woman with more power than I ever imagined possible. I could be a woman like that, too. The group starts moving away, walking in single file down the narrow path. First Lark and Lachlan, then Rose and Fionn. Rowan goes next. Sloane is the last to leave, casting a final glance toward the farm. My heart catches in my throat as I move in slow motion, rising from my hiding place, a single step onto the same path that continues into the woods behind me. Sloane's eyes snap to mine. They widen with surprise. Her hand tightens on the knife she holds against her thigh. And then I see it. Recognition. Her eyes track down the length of the shirt I'm wearing. the one she gave to me when I was naked in the dark. When she meets my eyes once more, she smiles. She nods. I nod in reply. And then she turns and walks away. I watch until she disappears after the others. When the forest has gone still, I turn and head in the opposite direction. Once upon a time, my name was Autumn Bauer. And I have my own story to tell. Bonus chapter. Suspend. Rose. I roll to a stop in the driveway and cut the engine to my Triumph, sliding my helmet off. I let it rest on the tank and brush the hair from my eyes so I can stare up at the house. Our house. Mine and Fionn's. The first house without wheels that I've ever owned. It needs some work, don't get me wrong. The deck might as well be ripped right off. We'll start demolishing the kitchen this weekend. Fionn was so eager to get the renovation started that he and Lachlan painted our bedroom and replaced the carpet the day after we moved in. I can even hear the drill upstairs now, its whine floating down to me through the open guest bedroom window. There's music, too. And Fionn's off-key singing. I smile and swing my leg over the bike. We've only been here a week, but it already feels like home. When I enter the house, it smells like fresh paint and sounds like happiness. Barbara wakes up and stretches, half in and half out of the wooden box Fionn built for her next to the brick fireplace. I set my helmet down and then give her a scratch, lingering for a moment to look at the photos he must have unpacked today to set on the mantle. Some of my circus family, some of Rowan and Lachlan. One from our first annual August showdown almost a year ago. Rowan's face a sickly shade of green from the poster paint that took a week to fade completely. And then there's one of my favorite photos, the biggest of the bunch. I pick it up and smile down at our kiss, frozen in time. It's a photo from our wedding last month at Covecrest Cottages in Maine, the same place where we reunited. The place where it felt as though a last invisible thread pulled closed around a wound that took months to heal. I run my finger over the glass that covers our faces, and then I set it back on the mantle. I don't linger. Not when Fionn belts out the lyrics to Don't Stop Me Now by Queen as loud as he can upstairs. I'm trying to sneak up the stairs, but I don't know yet which steps creak and which ones don't. Despite taking it slow, the fourth one is loud enough that somehow it alerts Fionn to my presence. I don't know how. It's as though his time with Leander has awoken a sixth sense that's been dormant for too long. The door to the guest room flies open, and a moment later, Fionn is standing at the top of the stairs with a drill in his hand and a grin on his face.
Hey,
he says, taking his phone from his pocket just long enough to turn off the music.
Were you trying to sneak up on me?
Maybe just a little, I reply, and his eyes brighten as though he's proud of himself for stopping me before I even got close. How the hell did you hear me? Fionn shrugs and closes the distance between us, not stopping until he reaches the stair above mine. He leans down to press a kiss to my lips. That sense of home only weaves tighter around me. The sense of sage and paint and mint. His warmth, his touch, his taste. The way his fingers caress my cheek and tangle in my hair. Our first kiss on the stairs. Fionn draws away but keeps me close, pressing a kiss to my forehead.
I have something for you,
he says, still close enough that I could count every shade of blue in his eyes. What is it?
A late wedding present.
I tilt my head and he grins.
It's a show, not tell kind of thing.
In a flash of motion, Fionn has picked me up and turned to deposit me on the step above him. In the next breath, his hands are covering my eyes. I thought you said show.
It's still a surprise, and not easily wrapped.
I grab the railing, and with Fionn's hands still over my eyes, we make it to the landing and turn in the direction of the guest room. What if I don't like it? I tease as we stop at the door.
Well, it's not really the kind of thing I can return.
Fionn lifts one hand away just long enough to turn the handle. The hinges creak as he pushes it open with a foot and then guides us over the threshold.
You ready?
I nod.
3, 2, 1.
He lifts his palms away, and I blink as I take in the room. There are no pictures or paintings, no dressers or desks, no bed. There's only one thing in the room, a single piece of furniture. The sex swing. I cackle a laugh and take in the finished project, a black crocheted piece suspended from a painted wood frame bolted into the ceiling. It looks suspiciously like an oversized plant hanger. That is amazing.
All credit to the Suture sisters. They helped to work out the kinks in the design.
I snort. Yeah, I bet Maud led the charge on that one, I say as I walk closer to inspect the finer details of the stitching. Did Bernard make the frame?
He sure did.
It's epic. I stare up at the hooks as I tug on the swing. Think it'll hold?
Only one way to find out.
Fionn's arm slides around my waist. His warm breath cascades across my neck between slow and luxurious kisses.
What do you think, Mrs. Kane?
Goosebumps ripple across my skin. I close my eyes and smile as I raise an arm and run my fingers through the short hair at the nape of his neck. I don't think I'll ever get tired of that.
Tired of what? Kisses? I hope not,
he says, pressing another lingering kiss to the juncture between my neck and shoulder. No, of you calling me Mrs. Kane. A rumbling hmm vibrates against my flesh. Fionn's fingers trace the sliver of skin at the edge of my shirt, then land on the button, slowly pulling it undone.
I'll never get tired of it either,
he says against the shell of my ear. I shiver as he frees the next button.
Mrs. Kane.
He frees another button, letting his touch graze my navel in a slow caress.
You are so beautiful, Mrs. Kane. Your skin is so soft.
His tongue traces a line up the length of my neck.
You taste so sweet. If only you knew the things I plan to do to you, Mrs. Kane. How I plan to devour you.
My breath shudders. Another button is pulled free. Then another, another. In moments that seem to pass too quickly, and yet not quickly enough, the shirt is sliding off my shoulders, falling to the hardwood floor. My bra is next, my jeans and panties. Then I'm standing naked, the weight of Fionn's ravenous gaze resting like a veil on my skin. I turn just enough to watch him reach behind his shoulders to pull his shirt off.
Turn around, Mrs. Kane,
he says, his voice husky with lust. I do as he asks, turning to face him. He doesn't come closer as his eyes trail the length of my body. They drag down my chest, past my navel, slowing over the narrow patch of hair at the apex of my thighs. I feel his need in every inch of skin his gaze consumes. Only once his attention has returned to my face does he step any closer.
I've been waiting to try this swing for so long.
How long? I ask, as he lifts me with one arm, positioning the swing with his free hand. Fionn chuckles as he sets me on the suspended yarn, and with just a little adjustment and a pause to ensure it's safe, he takes a step back.
Since you first brought it up.
A theatrical gasp passes from my lips, but Fionn hardly notices. Half of his focus is on my ankle as he slides it into a crocheted cuff, the other half on my pussy. You were thinking about me in the sex swing at the Suture Sisters meeting. You scoundrel. Though we both smile, the amusement between us doesn't linger in the air, burning away in the heat of desire.
From the moment you said it, I couldn't get it out of my head.
Fionn slips my other ankle into the second cuff, and then I'm bared to him, my legs spread wide. His eyes stay locked to mine as his warm palm slides up my calf, skimming over the scar from the night we met before pausing there. He kneels between my thighs. My breaths come in pants. He blows a thin stream of air across my folds and I shiver, my fingers tightening around fistfuls of soft yarn.
I imagined you just like this.
A slow lick passes over my center.
Spread open for me.
Another caress of his tongue.
At my mercy.
A lingering kiss.
Ready to be tasted.
I open my mouth, about to beg for more, when he seals his lips over my clit. My words dissolve into a moan. His tongue teases and circles. He kisses and sucks. He grips my thighs, imprinting his touch on my flesh. He feasts on me. When I tilt my head back and close my eyes, Fionn growls against my pussy, nipping my clit with a gentle bite that's soothed with a kiss when my attention snaps back to him. As soon as it does, he smiles with approval, never breaking his gaze from mine. It's wicked. It's decadent. It's perfection. And when he slides two fingers into my pussy and pumps them in a building, quickening rhythm, it's an unraveling. My fingers tangle in the yarn. I whimper and beg. I come apart, suspended in a moment of ecstasy that seems like it will never end. He draws out my pleasure, savoring it. I feel like a delicacy in his hands, and he doesn't stop until I'm a mess of unsteady breaths and surging heartbeats. I like the swing, is all I can manage when I feel confident that I can make words a few moments later. Fionn huffs a breath of a laugh, swiping his palm across the arousal glistening on his face.
I think we should still continue some testing. Best to be sure,
he says as he stands, slipping the cuffs from my ankles. With his eyes fused to mine and a rakish grin lifting one corner of his lips, he unbuttons his jeans and tugs them over his hips with his briefs, freeing his erection. You're probably right. We should be sure to fully quality control the prototype before we make version two.
Version two?
Fionn asks, and I give him a sage nod in reply as he lifts me from the swing just long enough to flip me over. My sweat-slicked belly and chest lie on the black yarn, my ass facing Fionn, my legs dangling off the edge. I figured we could try making a few, I reply as his palms caress the backs of my thighs and the globes of my ass. Maybe start a collection?
I love the way you think, Mrs. Kane.
Fionn glides the crown of his cock over my folds before notching it at my entrance. I look up as he tangles his fingers into the crocheted yarn, gripping it in tight fists. With a swift tug, he brings the swing toward him, sheathing his cock with my pussy. I gasp. He rumbles a growl. For a breath, we don't move.
And I fucking love the way you feel.
And then he fucks me. His hips slap my ass with every deep thrust. I swing forward and back, over and over. Pleasure is already coiling deep in my core with every stroke that glides over my inner walls. My body still sensitive from his touch, yet ready for more. And he gives me everything. He slows when he knows I'm coming close to unraveling. He quickens his pace when the orgasm seems like it might slip from my grasp. He teases me with shallow motion and lavishes me with rocking thrusts. And when I'm nearly mindless with need, I slide a hand beneath the bottom of the swing and swirl my fingers over my clit. Please, I beg, desperation filling that single word. His words are a strained and gravelly whisper when he says,
If you want me to fill your pussy, Mrs. Kane, you're going to have to come on my cock first.
As soon as those words leave his lips, I fall apart. Moaning, begging, clenching around him, blinded by stars. every muscle winding tighter and tighter until it feels like I dissolve. With a roar, Fionn slams into me as deep as my body will take him. His strokes become unsteady as he empties into me, but he doesn't pull away, not until he's sure every last drop of cum is spent inside me. And we stay that way for a long moment. It's not until my skin starts to cool beneath a sheen of sweat that he steps back and slides free of my pussy.
"Goddamn, Rose,"
he says, lifting me from the swing to set me on my unsteady feet.
"The swing was better than I imagined. What did you think?"
"I think..." I trail off as we both look down at my body. My skin is imprinted with a beautiful pattern of stitches that we've both had a hand in making. It's a web of memory, a map of our history in my flesh. When I look up and meet Fionn's eyes, I smile. And then I take a step back toward the swing, gripping onto the ropes of yarn to hop back onto the seat. "I think we should keep testing it out," I say with feigned innocence as I spread my legs, "just to be sure." Fionn's grin grows wicked, his eyes dark. He rests his hands on my knees, spreading them wider. His palms slide up my thighs, painting them with the arousal that coats my skin. He steps closer, leaning down until his lips are only a thread's width from mine.
"Whatever you say, Mrs. Kane,"
he whispers. He kisses me. He doesn't stop. The minutes and hours fall away, but each moment etches a map deep beneath my skin. Acknowledgements from the author. First and foremost, thank you to you, dear reader, for spending some of your time with Fionn and Rose, and their friends and family, and Barbara, and of course, the Suture Sisters, who I'm sure have started a thriving business selling sex swings on Etsy. It's hard to believe we're at the end of the Ruinous Love trilogy, though it doesn't truly feel like the end in many ways. The most cherished thing this series has brought to me is gratitude. I am so deeply appreciative of the outpouring of love and enthusiasm from you, the readers. It's humbling that you even want to spend a few hours of your time with these stories, so to see you then fall in love with the characters is deeply moving. While writing Butcher and Blackbird was joyful, and Leather and Lark was challenging, Scythe and Sparrow felt healing. I had a blast. I threw in some truly bizarre shit. And it's difficult to describe, but I felt like Rose and Fionn loved me back in a way characters don't often do. I wasn't just watching their lives unfold. I felt like they were bringing me into their story, sitting me down with a massive cup of coffee and saying, "Just hang out for a while and see what you find." I love them both, and I hope you do too. Endless, enormous thanks to Kim Whalen from the Whalen Agency. You've been by my side at every step of this journey, and I am so grateful for your unwavering support. You're hilarious as fuck, and I adore working with you. Every time I drink from my matching tumbler, I'll think of you. Thank you also to Mary Pender at WME and Orly Greenberg at UTA. Thank you both for helping to bring these characters to a whole new world. To Molly Stern, Sierra Stovall, Haley Wagreich, Andrew Rain, and the entire team at Zando, thank you for bringing the Ruinous Love trilogy far beyond what I ever expected it could be. That first thrill of seeing my book on the shelf in a bookstore is because of you, and I'm eternally grateful. Thank you also to copy editor Rachel Kowal, who has maybe now come to terms with the fact that I'll never get Lay versus Lie right. In the UK, huge thanks to the team at Little Brown UK, particularly Ellie Russell and Becky West, who have been so wonderful to work with and who were some of the very first folks in the publishing industry to rally behind the Ruinous Love series. Thank you also to Glenn Tavernack from Edition du Suel for being such a huge supporter of me and these characters. And I will always be so grateful to Andras Kepetz in Hungary, who set in place the first domino that brought these partnerships to life. Massive thanks to Najla and the team at Camber Designs. You are so wonderful to work with. I had very little to go on when I first came to you with the request to make the series covers. I'd barely started writing B&B, and yet you absolutely nailed all three cover designs. Thank you so much. To my wonderful PA and graphics wizard Val Downs of Turning Pages Designs, thank you for everything you do. You are so professional and supportive and talented and an absolute delight to work with. I appreciate you so much. I am enormously grateful to the amazing ARC readers and social media supporters of the Ruinous Love series. Thank you so much for taking the time to read, promote, and talk about these stories. Many of you have been on this journey with me since B&B. Some of you even earlier than that. And I hope you know that it means the world to me that you'd take the time to offer your support and encouragement. I'm honored to be on this journey with you. I want to say a special thanks to Christy, Chelsea, Lauren, and Abby, who have been not only huge supporters of the Ruinous Love trilogy from the beginning, but who I'm truly honored to have become friends with. Super special thanks to Jessica S. and Jessica M., who both so kindly vibe-checked things for me when I was in the I-want-to-burn-this phase of writing. Jess S., you've been my friend on this wild and wonderful journey for so long, and I adore you. Jess M., the sister I never had, thank you for your support and guidance. Similarly, a huge thank you to all my author friends. I'm lucky enough to say you're too many to name for fear of leaving anyone out, though I do need to shout out Santana Knox and H.D. Carlton in particular, as you have really been there for me in some wild times. There's no one I'd rather be in a human centipede with. Yeah, it's as weird as it sounds. I've learned so much from you. You've been a safe harbor in the turbulent sea that is publishing, and I'm incredibly thankful for your friendship. To Samantha Brentmore and Eric Nolan for providing what I'm positive will be another exceptional and heartfelt performance. Thank you for not only bringing my characters to life, but for your support and friendship. Last, but certainly not least, to my amazing boys. This book would not have been possible without my husband, Daniel, as much as he'd argue that point. He took the time to talk through story ideas with me, to read draft passages, to bring me food and water to keep me alive. When I would write late into the night, he would stay up to silently sit next to me, no matter how tired he was, just so I wouldn't be alone. I love you so much, Daniel. You truly are an exceptionally supportive partner and the most amazing husband. And to my son Hayden, thank you for your incredible hugs, your endless kindness, and your infectious laugh. I love you until the end of time and beyond. And if you've read anything before this page, you're grounded.
This is Eric Nolan. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Scythe and Sparrow by Bryn Weaver. Read for you by Samantha Brentmore and Eric Nolan. Presented by Zando Audio. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. Recorded at Noise Miner Studios, Dublin. Executive Producer, Sierra Stovall. Text copyright 2025 by Bryn Weaver. Production copyright 2025 by Zando LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.